Staff, item seven, staff reports. Gail.
We recently received the agenda for the Calipers Trustees Roundtable. We received it after we had prepared the agenda for this meeting. It's occurring on October 27th. It will be on the October 5th agenda for approval, but I wanted to give you a heads up so you can plan for that if you're planning on attending. Also, we do have our CSERA employee social security integration vote occurring in November, and I will be sending additional information out to you concerning that.
Okay. Karen?
No reports.
Tim?
No.
Colin?
No.
Ann?
No.
Christina?
Nothing.
Jeez. Things are going well.
We'll get out of here.
no outside professionals here. Trustee comment.
Hey, you call a couple of years ago. I was trying to see if we could get the retirees and the appointed officials more than $100 per meeting. We dropped it because it was a year of the Reed DeMaio pension initiative, but we are going to bring it up again. The bill, what they're doing now, they're getting feelers. The lobbyists from SACRS are getting feelers to see if it'll go. It'll be between 100 and 400 we're proposing based on the system with the, how they feel about it.
Is that a SACRS legislative proposal?
It could be.
Oh.
We want it to be. So the lobbyists are getting feelers right now, and then we'll see about bringing it up.
This would be retroactive to 2013?
Yeah, right.
Good chance. I remember Scott and I had this conversation before, though, but I mean, really, a lot of you are working for less than minimum wage. And not only, I know a lot of you do it for money, but also it could attract other systems, could attract, you know, maybe other people to be interested. So I think it's a positive thing. So I'll keep you updated.
$15 an hour? Is that what you want to move it to?
Yeah.
Any other trustee comments?
I have a couple. We attended, David and Jerry and I attended the Porchlight client conference in New York last week. And I don't want to make this too lengthy, but the sense of the room, and Jeff was there as well, the sense of the room was that there's still room to run. Banks have $2 trillion in excess reserves at the Fed that if Dodd-Frank were repealed or modified, that money would be freed up and brought into the market. What was interesting was the current economic climate of what certainly in the blue states appears to be boom, the primary markets boom, is not debt driven. That is, it's not the credit markets that are fueling that equity surge. It's not debt driven. So they view that it still has legs. I think that one of the themes we explored was, is winter coming? Mm-hmm. And the answer was, at some point, yes, but not soon. What was the mood?
Right.
So you know, Torchlight deals in secondary markets. That's where so much of where that practice is. If you're in San Francisco, Seattle, L.A., Boston, New York, you know, that's not where the opportunities are. Everywhere else, there's still a thriving opportunity. We had the guest speaker and commentator was George Will. Mm. If you ever have the opportunity to hear George Will, he's fascinating. He's riveting.
Yeah.
To
how
me.
Old is he now?
I mean, he's in his 80s.
No, he's older.
He was born
than
in 1940.
That's it?
And what? 41. Is that young?
40, was it 40 or 41?
41.
Something like that.
Really? I thought he's been writing for so long.
Yeah.
I know.
He is really, really, his knowledge and awareness of a broad spectrum of issues that to one degree or another interrelate in the general economic fabric was remarkable. Encyclopedic knowledge of statistics, but not just having them, it's what they mean and what they relate to and how they drive a point. That his quote, I tried to do it justice, I'm not going to get it right, but he made an observation, that I'm not making a political statement. He said, you know, if you look at the past 8 years prior to the current White House incumbent, you had essentially 2% GDP growth, and his recitation was, we'd done better than that in prior years, including the Great Depression, where you had 3% GDP growth. And his point was, The difference between 2% and 3% of GDP isn't 1%. It's the difference between having an economy that actually produces opportunity and economic wealth and economic redistribution of that wealth versus an increasingly partisan Congress who, in a 2% environment, is the mechanism left to try to either create wealth or to redistribute it. Anyway, I thought it was profound in the moment. He said it a hell of a lot better, but it was a very telling observation, and one that I really hadn't focused on. We talk about how weird the economy is. We look at the stock market all-time highs again yesterday, and it's, I call it a weird economy because it seems to be vibrant, and yet jobs seem to be scarce for so many people, particularly the so-called millennials. It has a different feel. And one of the reasons it has a different feel, I think, was that telling stat. Anyway, so I don't know what that had to do with the debt investment, but it was very interesting. But a great conference, Torchlight.
They always do a good conference.
Dan Heflin's a very smart guy in the room, learned a lot. I didn't want to trump Jerry and David, but I wanted to share that.
One of Dan's questions to George Will was, we all know you're very bright. How do you acquire all this knowledge and statistics with all, everything? Because, I mean, he was laying statistics out left, right, and down the middle that were pretty important, and you went, wow, I didn't realize that, or wow, I didn't realize that. And he said to Ben, he says, I spend the first 5 hours every day reading all the papers and reading over the internet, just I sit and read. So he spends 5 hours a day just researching and going through papers. I was like, wow. You know, I spend 45 minutes, you know, and I got to get moving. He was 5 hours a day, and then he starts his day. I thought that was really interesting. And it was, for me, it was a good conference. I have always enjoyed Torchlight. I thought it was a great fun when we first got into it, and I think it's given us decent returns for as long as we've been with them. And they run a quality outfit. They're a good team. I'm glad we got into them when we did, and I hope we continue to stay with them, or I hope they continue to bring us the returns they have in the past.
So we did some site visits. You wanna?
Yeah, we did two on-sites, Paulson's and
First Eagle.
Yeah, First Eagle. Paulson's real estate thing, it's a $25 million, I think we're into them for 20 or $25 million. What is it? It's somewhere right in that ballpark. Anyway, one of their investments, it was kind of interesting because one of their investments, I had said earlier that I did a conference, and the guy had talked about how risky it is to invest in bare land, and that he was saying it's not wise to invest in bare land. Well, we go to Paulson's, and Paulson's invests in bare land, and then they also buy up developments that may be halfway developed and they've run up against barriers and they can't afford to continue, so the Paulson comes in and bails them out and continues the process and has been successful at it. And one of their investments was Lake Las Vegas in Nevada. And there was a folder on it, and they brought it up and they showed us, and I was amazed at how much undeveloped land there was in that piece, but yet the developed land, they have brought in developers that have taken up what were people have left off, and they have four or five property developers that construction companies that are really into making it work, and it is working. And so I see that this undeveloped land down the road will probably do as well as the three or four pieces that are in development right now.
He showed us that years ago, right, Tim? That one they presented years ago?
Yeah, we've been in that for about 3.5 years now.
Right. Yeah. But in terms of Bear Land or projects, my understanding of our investment in Paulson is their central premise is that they bought what would be classically considered distressed real estate, mm-hmm. but take on no entitlement risk, which is that whether it's Bear Land or a project that's half built or people walked away from, all of the entitlements have been gained because Paulson takes on no entitlement risk. Right. My very first on-site was Paulson.
I remember you talking about that at a meeting.
Four years ago. I didn't get to go in this one, but that's what makes it's all about basis, right?
Scott, describe entitlement risk. What is it?
So entitlement risk is if you were in California, if you wanted to start a project on bare land, you've got to go through the environmental review process. Environmental review, the uncertainty, discretionary decisions by a board of supervisors or city council, stuff happens, it's all bad.
How do you not assume that when you own the property?
So what happens is the projects, my understanding, I'm not an expert in this, but my understanding of the investments that Paulson has made, so in the aftermath of the 08 meltdown, so many projects had already been entitled. So they went from 2003 to 2007, 4 years of chasing use permits, going through environmental reviews, getting final approvals, and actually getting your building permits to say, go do, you can start. You've been through the gauntlet, you can start. They start, everything goes to heck, right? The 08 meltdown occurs, real estate at the forefront of it, and you know all these projects either go bankrupt or they start selling off pieces to get out of it. But the entitlements were already gained and are in place. And I can remember when Paulson was here, I was trying to understand the fundamental premise of these investments, and it got down to basis. I remember that being my first lesson in basis here, which is that at the right price, with no entitlement risk, that's what they do. They take a distressed property that is already entitled, and
so it works best after 2008, for example.
Well, in this particular fund, in this particular model, yes. But I'm certain that all those guys could tell you all the variations on that theme. But
and just for the board's edification,
I saw you smiling.
Yes. In general, in our real estate, we do not take entitlement risk in any stage, whether it's value add, opportunistic, or distress. The entitlement risk is a speculator's risk. They're going through that process there. We have not historically looked at that and said that the risk-reward trade-off makes sense for Contra Costa. But when somebody gets through that entitlement process and has all the legal documentation in place and is ready to go, our funds come in with the capital backing to accelerate the project. And that's historically what we've done here. Is we back the funds or the capital providers to get a project built out once entitlement is taken care of.
Yeah.
Now, your question, like, when does it work? In 2008, there was more of it. There were more broken deals, so we were able to come in at a lower cost. But in general, regardless of market environment, we come in after the entitlement process is complete.
I don't know. I didn't ask Paulson how they saw the future, whether or not they were going to be able to find more deals with entitlement already intact, which would have been a good question to ask.
Well, we're coming up on another business cycle now. As soon as the correction hits, we'll have another set of opportunities.
They've only been predicting it for about 2 years.
And then with First Eagle?
Go ahead.
Well, First Eagle was... a good and interesting visit, and part of their investment is actually they're holding a fair amount of cash in reserve.
Yeah, and gold.
And gold. And not necessarily because they want to have all that cash, but mainly because they want to make sure that when they spend the cash that it's actually working, that's doing something productive. So they're happy to hold it. But they also believe quite a bit in gold, which we were wondering about.
And not only bullion, but they also have some gold mines, which was surprising to me.
Yeah. And so they see gold as kind of a hedge against problems down the road. Mm-hmm. And so we asked the difference, how do you, cash versus gold, what's the difference? They're both liquid assets. And So cash, apparently very low short-term risk, short-term volatility, but in the long term, it's a loser. And then gold is actually can have some volatility in the short term, but in the long term, it's more stable.
More stable.
So
cash isn't king.
We felt better.
There.
Prince.
We felt good about that meeting.
Yeah.
Will.
Yes, thank you. Gabe and I also attended NC PERS Public Safety in San Antonio. It was a good conference. One of the things that stood out to me, there were a number of topics there, but one of the things that stood out to me was that an actuary spoke and covered a number of things. And all the things that he mentioned, we were way ahead of, such as amortization term, negative amortization. He also mentioned that in the state of Texas that there are plans that are having amortization terms of infinity, essentially never paying off their unfunded liability. He also mentioned, talked about a fixed term versus a rolling term, and just from his experience, plans are not funding appropriately. But what I felt really good with was, one, the quality of our actuaries. I was not impressed too much with his presentation. And I'm very glad that we have Siegel and Paul Angelo.
Yeah.
And I felt very knowledgeable about everything he was talking about. So that tells me that our staff and Siegel have done a great job of educating us. But most importantly, I feel like everything I heard was that our plan is very fiscally responsible in terms of the way that we deal with our unfunded liability and those type of things. Because it's just, in Texas, it's kind of the Wild West up there in some regard. Let's see, other things, we talked about some disability things, and then towards the end of the conference, and I'm just going to keep it short, I took a bunch of notes, but they did an informal percentage of funding poll, just with a show of hands, and I just thought everyone would find this interesting, but just in the show of the room, and again, there was probably close to 800 attendees, maybe?
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't know what the total number of plans were, but just by a raise of hands, for 100% funded, there was about 5% that raised their hands, including one they mentioned that is essentially, that was talked about earlier, was essentially super funded, way past what they need, but their kind of outlook is we still need more, because there's things that we can't anticipate in the future, so we still need more. So they're still very aggressively.
I think, too, we don't know what their benefit structure is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk
what's
about.
Their benefit to be right. 100% funded? It
Plus,
was unlikely.
And how do they justify that to the sponsor or sponsors?
Yeah.
Small agency, 10 employees? What?
I know, that's the thing. It was
a large
agency.
Yeah,
I have
to go
so
back and
know.
Check my notes. But it was
2% of
huge,
80 or something.
Yeah. It was a huge. They had like eight billion in surplus. They had $8 billion in surplus, I think, is what they thought. So. But 10% were between the 90-99% range, and then 10% of the show of hands was 80-90, with 25% being 70-80, and then about 10% were less than 60% funded.
Less than 60.
Yeah. So, but it was overall, it was a good conference, and I just wanted to share those things. And I have a bunch of notes, but I'll spare you the details.
Well, Dr. McDonald and I went to the Advanced Trustee One Award, which was phenomenal. But one thing of going to national ones like the NC PERS or even the II or the Wharton one is you get these perspectives from people across the nation, and we really are doing good. Because we sit at lunch and chat. I mean, we're 86% funded now. I mean, that's like incredible from a lot of ones I'm talking to.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was really good. One thing I did find was funny was some states are actually being creative, wouldn't be at our county level, but they're doing, like, if they open up an Indian casino, they're getting a percent of that's going towards funding their pensions. So, I mean, there's other things, other lottery things, certain tax ways of funding I thought was kind of creative. So that's it.
Any other trustee comment?
No. Further information on First Eagle. It's a fund that is low volatility global equity. And the returns from First Eagle kind of hold us back a little bit, are not as robust as some of the other things that we're doing. But after our meeting, we felt confident that it's actually a nice hedge to have our involvement with them, because when winter does come, we'll be glad we're have money with
it
those guys.
Come.
Yeah. Also, I attended the advanced portfolio workshop at Wharton, and that was
outstanding.
Gabe came also, and it was just nonstop, great program.
It was good because we may be getting into hedge funds. So they talked a lot about, like, I never really knew about absolute return, things like that. So there was good knowledge. I guess I always come back with questions for Tim. So what's this and what's that?
Yeah, one of the big takeaways that we had was just the overall concept of returns. And you look at, you know, well, if you're 100% in stocks, then, you know, it might be 7%. If you're 100% in bonds, it might be 3%. So there's 4%, whatever. But then you look at the different combinations and so forth. And but not just looking at the percent returns, because everything is discussed basically in percentage of return, but also the volatility tied to that return. And so an investment, if both returns are equal, but one has higher volatility than the other, then the one with the higher volatility will actually get you less return over time, total return, and so forth. So you really have to look at both numbers, and that was...
And we did, in just discussion, I brought the fully focused portfolio, and it was really I mean, even the professor was impressed with that, because they're looking at new ways how to, you know, hit our target, so that was well received.
Good. All right.
Great.
Yeah. Motion, our meeting adjourned.
No lunch.